my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, and my co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris... What are we going to review this week?
Well, I don't like your tone, Mr. Horrocks. I'm sorry, but this is my pick. And, you know, I could have inflicted the great martial artist, Mr. Avedon, on you. And I thought, no, we can't have six Lauren Avedon movies in our portfolio without finishing some of the fucking classics or classics in our eyes. So, Dave, I decided we're going back to 1984. And when I say... I have watched movies hundreds of times. This movie has been watched by me and my family hundreds of times, Dave. So just before I say that, do you remember I said to you last week about Lethal Weapon 2?
Mm-hmm.
I told my brother Adam, we're doing Lethal Weapon 2, Dave. First thing he said was, it's just been revoked. And I'm just like, I sent it to Dave on the podcast. I didn't say yet. Like, Adam was my brother. I knew you'd do that. And then he's going, diplomatic immunity. And I'm like, fuck off. And he's pissing himself. He's doing all the lines out of the thing, all the lines out of the film. But anyway, another Phelps family classic. This movie has gone to Spain with us when because my dad would never fly. So they had like a seven-seater with a mobile DVD player. My brothers and sisters used to watch it. It is, Dave, the absolute star-studded classic, and I'm bigging it up because I know exactly what you're going to say, the Cannonball Run 2, Dave. So, when do you remember watching this, Dave?
Chris, this is one that I remember watching a lot with my uncles. I probably haven't watched these kind of movies, so Cannonball Runs and Smokey and the Bandit hundreds of times like you, but definitely tens of times, and watching it over and over as a kid, and remembered quite a lot of the things. I couldn't tell you what happened before I saw it, but as it unfolded, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this, because I haven't watched this in about 30 years, but it was definitely on my nan's side, you know, particularly my Uncle Stevie. He used to love these kind of car and truck-based movies, you know. I remember Convoy as well. That was a favourite at the time. And yeah, before going into this, because we did Cannonball Run, the original, a little while back as well, I was thinking, you know what, I think I might have seen the second one a bit more and have more love for it. And as it was unfolding, I was thinking, yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen this one more. And definitely as a kid, I loved this one. How about yourself, Chris?
I'm not liking this fucking foreshadowing that's going on. Right, so it's Burt Reynolds, Dave. My dad loved Burt Reynolds. We had to like Burt Reynolds. We watched these movies. We had them on video. We, you know, recorded off the TV. We bought them, DVDs, everything. I mean, my version now is... the Asian version, because it was pre-released in Asia. I did have an American one and a UK one, but I don't know where they are. At some point I must have either lost them or someone's borrowed them and never given me back. So I've got the proper Asian subtitles on this DVD I watched, Dave, but it's brilliant. It's a film that we've watched over and over. Like I say, we quote and quote the movie. Burt Reynolds is an absolute movie icon for me. Nobody can tell me otherwise. I know in the 80s, and just before he did this, Dave, and I'm going to inflict this on you at some point, we're going to review Stroker Ace. And I think I've talked to you about it before. It is fucking woeful, Dave. Woeful movie. And it's another Hal Needham, Burt Reynolds. Hal Needham is a director. Burt Reynolds' best friend. Hal Needham's the guy that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's supposed to be the stuntman who thingy played Brad Pitt. So Hal, part of his character, sorry. It'll be a few other stuntmen, but part of his character is Hal Needham. Hal Needham was down as the toughest and best stuntman in Hollywood. So he's an absolute... He's the guy when Bigfoot drives over his Porsche, Dave, and he throws the thing at the start of the movie. That's Hal Needham. Yeah. So he's the director and everything. So this is just after Stroker Ace. And Stroker Ace, I don't think it's got 10% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, Dave. I mean, this has got 14, but let's not talk about that. But anyway, yeah, it's been watched over and over. I love it. I do think the first one is my favourite of the two. But as a kid, I always preferred the second one. But as I've got older, I appreciate the fact that this first one is produced and made a little bit better, if there's such a thing with these movies. But yeah, the second one was always the elusive one because it was never on UK TV. So when we used to go to the video shop as well, when we didn't have it on recording, or if we had it on a record from the TV, it was always a little bit dumbed down and cut. We'd always go, it was dead difficult to get it in the video shop, the second one. It was so, so difficult. And as the years went on, it became quite elusive. The first one's been on UK TV loads. The second one, not as much. So, yeah. So for me, it is a Phelps family iconic movie, Dave, of the highest order.
Yeah, see, we had it taped, you know, the old sellotape job. So I had easy access to it on probably a Scotch tape at the time, Chris. I didn't feel that elusiveness, to be honest. And I think that's why I've seen the second one more. And just as a kid, you just don't really think about it too deeply, do you? You just gravitate to the thing that you want to watch. So,
yeah,
I just remember this being round at my nan's. So if I was over there, you know, it was one of the films that I'd stick on. And so, it was very, very good. Because Hal Needham directed the first one, didn't he? But Brock Yates wrote the first one.
Yeah.
Whereas the second one, you know, it was sort of written by Hal Needham and Harvey Miller. So a different writing team, Chris. And I hadn't realised, I don't think, when we did the first one, but it's by Golden Harvest, isn't it? You say about it's the Asian release that you watched there. You know, they obviously did the Enter the Dragon, all the Bruce Lee movies and stuff. It seems like an odd combination, to be honest. You know, kung fu movies and car movies, a bit of a weird one there.
It is, Dave, but I'm not happy how we're going to go after the trailer, Dave. So let's unleash the horror. So let's put the trailer on, Dave.
Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, the popcorn's in the lobby and the nuts are on the screen. You wanted it. You got it. Cannonball Run 2. And this time, there's no limit. No limit to the lunacy. No limit to the chaos. No limit to the stars. Burt Reynolds. Dom DeLuise.
What a team.
Dean Martin. Sammy Davis Jr. Jamie Farr. Mary Lou Henner. Kelly Savalas and Shirley MacLaine. Susan Anton. Catherine Bach. Buster Brooks. Sid Caesar. Jackie Chan. Tim Conway. Tony Danza. Jack Elam. Richard Kiel. Con Nuts. Ricardo Montalban, Jim Nabors, Charles Nelson Reilly,
$9 million,
Joe Theismann, Mel Tillis,
weird,
Abe Vigoda, Frank Sinatra. At last comes the motion picture from the greatest book of traffic citations ever written. Cannonball Run 2.
Having lost the first Cannonball Run race, Sheikh Abdul Ben Falafel is ordered by his father to go to America and win another Cannonball Run in order to emblazon the falafel name as the fastest in the world. When Sheikh Abdul points out that there is no Cannonball Run this year, his father simply says, "Let's buy one." Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Fuck off, your lack of enthusiasm for this one, Dave. You are not fucking playing poker today, my friend. Look, it's the music gets me. I mean, Cannonball Run 2 starts off slightly different. The first one is purely the music kicks in, you've got the Lamborghini driving up and down. The second one, you've got that little bit of a dialogue with them, and then the music kicks in, and you've got Catherine Bat, Dave. You've got Daisy Duke in the Lamborghini, yeah. Dave, changing it. Now, I've got to say, is it Andrea Barbeau, what she's called? And she was in the
from the first one. Yeah,
first one.
Yeah.
Oh, she's levels. Catherine Bach's beautiful. But I must admit, the two girls in the second one, they do look like... No, I'm not even going to say it, Dave, but they're a slight down.
Like
they look like you would probably meet them if you were single in Las Vegas for a good weekend, Dave. But let's go no more than that.
The thing is, Chris, I mean, let's call it out, because you can't get away from the kind of sexism and stuff in this. But, you know, they play up to their womanliness, don't they? The thing is, Chris, with Adrienne Barbeau, you can kind of get it. She, you know, when she unzips her top down there and you know, showing off her bosom.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, these girls are absolutely stunning. Like you say, you can't mistake old Daisy Duke there. But they're not...
They're not good up top, fairly flat chested, aren't they?
They unzipped. I wouldn't say good or bad. It just is. You know, they unzip the top, and it's like, well, what? There's nothing there. So, yeah, I thought it was an interesting choice. I mean, like I say, with Adrienne Barbeau, you can get it and why she does that move. But then to do the same thing with these two just seemed a bit weird to me.
Yeah, it does, to be fair. They're not the same caliber, Dave. Look, you know, Dave, I have fucking absolutely rinsed Cannonball Run one day for them fucking bits when I was a kid. Any sort of fucking cleavage shot and I'm fucking all over it, my friend. You know what I mean? So yeah, there was a difference in this one. But I think it starts well. Obviously, the Lamborghini gets sprayed, you know, from white to red, and you've got this... overdubbed voice thing, aren't you? Like the cops supposedly like, oh, there's some two great looking chicks, but then it's like it doesn't really go with the context of how fast the car's traveling. It's proper fake.
Let's look at these two kids. Look at these two chicks. Let's not worry about the license plate or anything. And then the other guy goes, let's nail them. I'm like,
yeah.
Fucking hell.
And even in the first one, there's no way you'd be able to see them chicks going past them. And I'm calling them chicks in the context of the movie before someone tells me off. Because they're going like fucking 150 miles an hour. I don't care who you are, Dave, unless you've got fucking Superman's fucking x-ray eyes. You don't know who's driving the Lamborghini. The windows are so tiny. So it always... tickles me that it always does. In the first one, they sort of shoot down the Trans Am because the cops chase him in the Trans Am, basically, and a bit of a nod to Smoking the Bandit. I'm going to mention it at the time, but it was more of a sort of like, we're past all that. But this, yeah, it's fucking nonsense. And then the next scene is fucking JJ and Victor. And it makes me laugh because he's getting Victor to go in this torpedo with a German fucking fighter pilot from World War II. And then the guy on the commentary is going, this man will be world famous. This man's going to have riches beyond. He's going to have women falling. And then next week, Burt Reynolds or JJ's like, let me get in there. So I always remember that scene just being, even as a kid, not particularly liking it. I used to always wind me up because I think, this is fucking stupid. But it's the context of the Cannonball Run, Dave. It always is just ridiculous. And then we get Blake and Fenderbond, which to me, to be fair, Sammy Davis and Dean Martin. With Burt Reynolds, but they're my two favourites. In the first one, I think they're hilarious. But he's in Vegas with, I mean, Dean Martin looks 68 at least, and he's got this woman who's stunning.
He's got to be a
fucking granddaughter, Dave. Look at his fucking daughter. She's beautiful, this woman.
Yeah.
And then Fenderbomb's on the outside, like knocking on the fucking window cleaner's like platform, isn't he? And they're doing all that. And it's like, I mean, you do get a shot of Vegas, which I'm happy with, but the whole thing is supposed to be set around Nevada and places like that. And they're trying to get to Connecticut, which is obviously on the East Coast. But yeah, it's just nonsense. The whole thing is just ridiculous. And I love it, but Dave, go on, put me out of my misery. What are you saying?
Chris, I feel like you're racing through the plot so we can get to the end before I ever say it. Chris, this film is fucking shit. right? It does not hold up at all. This is the most blatant cash-in of a sequel ever. It tries to take that magic of what the first one was and the whole kind of mysticism around the cannonball run, and it was a race. Chris, there's hardly a fucking race in this one. They try and crowbar a plot in there. And with all of the jokes, I can't tell, is this made for children? Like, because it's so fucking juvenile, all of it. None of it makes any sense. I remember as a kid loving the bit where, you know, the Lamborghini, the white Lamborghini comes in, gets sprayed, and it turns to red and stuff. And I thought, oh, that's so cool. But then you stand back as an adult and you go, well, that makes no fucking sense at all, does it? If you just got these random blokes and you just drive in and they spray your car, or did they have them waiting for some reason? I don't know. You know, or what did they have it covered in? Was it covered in powder? So it just washes off with water. It's just fucking nonsense. And fucking Sheikh Abdul Ben Falafel. And then you've got the mob. They're all fucking named after Italian pastas. This, Chris, was written in crayon, if it was written at all. It is terrible. It is fucking... This film holds up worse than I think any of the other films that we've watched.
Well, Dave, you can fuck right off, man. Even Dom DeLuise doing his fucking Corleone thing with the dead cat.
Oh, my God. Hey, this cat is dead. Oh, fucking brilliant. Did they write, a genuine question, do you know, did they write this, or did they just have a vague idea of scenes and stuff and just say, improvise away?
I know that. The second one, especially, Burt Reynolds had said in 82, I'm not doing a car racing film. Then he did Stroker Race and this. Yeah.
Cha-ching. Changed my mind.
Well, to be fair, though, Dave, these movies, on a more serious note, I'm trying to fucking claw it back here, but the Cannonball Run and Stroker Race were pretty much, well, they were the death of Burt Reynolds' career for a long time until he did Boogie Nights, because nobody would take him seriously. He overlooked, there was a film he should have done when he did Stroker Race, because Hal Needham was his best mate, and he overlooked it. And the guy who portrayed that role, and it was all for Burt Reynolds, he won an Oscar. You know, I don't think Burt Reynolds ever won an Oscar. You know, so I know there's some good movies he's done, you know, like Deliverance and that. And there's stuff like Sharky's Machine and that. Great movies, Dave. Like, he's a cop in it. I mean, look, fucking Burt Reynolds' wig is horrendous in this one. It's a proper jig, isn't it? It's a proper jig. It's really bad. But you watch stuff like Sharky's Machine and he's got his real hair, you know, when he's hardly got a hairline and stuff. A couple of years before that. But yeah, it was the death of his career for over 10 years at least because of this. And you're right, look, it's nonsense. The fucking whole thing with the cat. And that's what makes you laugh is the parodying everything, because the three guys who his henchmen, they're all in The Godfather. Yeah. They are actually in the... And they actually asked Marlon Brando to play this role and he was like, I'm not fucking playing it. But then after he saw it, he was gutted and he wished he could, to show people he wasn't so miserable or robbing money from fucking Christopher Reeve and Superman, as we know, Dave.
Wanting to play a fucking green bagel or whatever it was.
Exactly. But yeah, I cannot argue with you, Dave. When you watch it now, it is, there's some really rough bits in it. And I tell you what is rough watching it now. I mean, I've not watched this for about a year, 18 months. The first one I watch all the time, but about 18 months. I don't think the editing's all that, you know. When it cuts from scene to scene, it's really fucking choppy, this one. Yeah. Really choppy. But go on, keep it going.
That fucking, you know when he gets dropped, he's like the human bomb. And, you know, you get Captain Chaos, he's in there. Because, you know, Burt Reynolds has convinced him to do it. But, you know, he's said maybe him would do it. I find the editing so bad on when he drops down and hits the floor. Something you say, like the physics just makes no sense whatsoever. And then it keeps cutting to Burt Reynolds and he's clearly like just stood up in this thing, you know, with the camera on him going, ah, and then he cuts away. And then again, this missile kind of drops to the floor and then picks up momentum and pace and carries on in a different trajectory. It's just horrendous. And it was at that point when I was like, The first body punch was the whole falafel name, and I was like, oh, really? That's where we're going? And then the second one was this whole scene, and I was just like, ah, oh, shit. I think this one is going to destroy my... No, it's just... I had a lot of love for this one as a kid, so it should have really just stayed in my memory there. And I kind of knew that some of the, like the racial stereotypes and stuff with the Arabs and the Jackie Chan with the Chinese and stuff, I knew it wasn't going to age particularly well. But it's the amount that is just fucking shit, I wasn't really expecting, to be honest.
No, and look, when they're doing the whole Godfather scene, he says the tortellini's fucking cannelloni, you know, everything is just fucking Italian food.
Different pastas and stuff like that. It's just like,
fucking terrible.
This is why I say, was it intended for children, or could they just not be arsed? Was it just like, hey, we're going to parody the Godfather scene, let's put in some Italian food. You know, we're going to parody the Arabs, let's put in some falafels. It's just... If fucking, you know, they had an Englishman, would he be Mr. Fish and Chips? It's bizarre. And obviously, Roger Moore didn't want to do it, did he?
No.
After the first one, they'd asked him. But instead, they're getting Jaws. So, you know, I kind of appreciated that. But they've kind of done the whole James... They've carried the James Bond parody off as well, haven't they? With the old car, and it turns into a submarine and stuff. It's got all the gadgets on board and stuff. So, again, as a kid, I was lapping all this stuff up. But I thought it was poor.
Well, actually, you made a very good point there, because the most unbelievable thing of this whole movie is fucking Richard Keel getting into Mitsubishi Starion, Dave, because there's no way he's sat in the back fucking there in that vehicle. And look, he's a big guy. I used to was so scared of him in Moonraker, and I think it's The Spy Who Loved Me. I think he's in the two James Bond movies. And obviously in Moonraker, you know, he ends up being a bit of a good guy at the end when he meets that girl. But oh, I used to hate him. And then I've watched him in Mean Machine as well, early 70s. He's there, Burt Reynolds. He's like one of the guys, the prisoners who becomes part of the team. And he was just an awe-inspiring monster. But he had so much problems with his knees. So obviously you can see in this, he doesn't move around a lot. This is early 80s. So it is, it's ridiculous. And when they're in the bar before the race, and then we introduce Richard Keel, and that barman is the guy in the first one, when Fendermon and Blake are actually stood at the bar as priests, and Dean Martin's going, I'd like to nail her. He's the guy who spits the drink out. Well, in this one, he's the barman, and he's going, does anyone speak Oriental? And then obviously, it's so bad. It's so bad, them bits. And obviously, you've got them all there. The three gangsters get Dean Martin and Sammy Davis, don't they? And then fucking falafel comes in the sheet, comes in and looks at the shoes and says, buy a store. And he's just got wads of cash. Again, a fucking stereotype that all sheiks are fucking wadded, Dave. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's ridiculous. He's handing money out hand over fist. But the one thing, and this is my criticism of this movie, is...
The one thing,
that always bugged me in this more than anything, and knowing that Burt Reynolds just dialed this in because he filmed it so quickly, is I was so gutted, loving Smokey and the Bandit, the fact that he fucking doesn't even drive in this movie.
No.
He's sat, not once, there's one bit where they say, they take him off the road, Sammy Davis and that, and it's not even the fucking the Corvette they're driving, it's actually Frank Sinatra. That car, by the way, Frank Sinatra drives, he's one of his own personal cars, and he actually turned up in it and then used it for the he wanted to bring it on set, but that's the car that takes him off the road, not the Corvette, because I'm a massive car person, especially the American muscle cars, and for years I'm like, that's not even the same fucking car that runs him off the road. You can clearly see he's got the grey stripe at the bottom, it's a completely different shape. But anyway, when he becomes a general, it always bugged the fuck out of me. And obviously, Shirley MacLaine and the other girl, the other girl's in loads of Burt Reynolds stuff. She was in, a sitcom in the 90s I used to watch, and she was in that. She's in a lot of his stuff. She's one of his personal friends as well. I can't remember what her bloody name is, but she's the other girl who dresses as the nuns, and that whole thing is fucking, it's just like a love story all the way through, and Burt Reynolds is just sat in the back getting his fucking, his medal stroke, Dave. It's just fucking nonsense. That it's always bugged me because he doesn't drive at all in this movie, and it pisses me right off.
It's bizarre. Like I say, it's as if they forgot what the magic of the first one was. And again, look, this was commercially successful. It cost around 20 million, made about 56 million. So, yeah, you know, not a bad return on that. But for me, it's a massive drop off from the first one. And like I say, they've tried to cram in a proper plot. Whereas, you know, the first film, it was a race. And there's just not that much racing in this one. It's just bizarre. I didn't realise that about Shirley MacLaine, but I did think the other one, Betty, I thought she had a bit of a Jennifer Aniston look about her.
Mm,
and I thought old Captain Chaos had done all right for himself there.
Yeah. I'll tell you what epitomises this whole movie is Tony Danza and Mel Tills having a fucking orangutan driving. That whole idea that their uncle, fucking the car salesman, gives him this orangutan with this fucking orangutan pretend driving the vehicle while they're in the back. And that car is a limousine like JJ's, and it's going to keep up with a fucking Lamborghini, exactly. Dave, and a Corvette and stuff, other things. It's just
fucking,
they're
in a fucking
stupid
race. It's just like someone's decided we need a monkey. I know it's an orangutan, but, you know, we need a monkey in the movie. How can we get one in? And it's bad, isn't it? If you're in an actual race, you don't fucking get a limo, do you, to try and keep up with everything else. I tell you what else was weird. And again, I'm not sure if this was aimed at six-year-olds, I think it'd be quite funny. And I remember, again, as a kid, I did find it funny. But when Fenderbaum is trying to catch up with Jamie, and he's in there with his granddaughter.
You got me then.
and then he comes up the outside of the fucking high-rise building, doesn't he? And he's like, he's pretending to like hold on. And Blake's just like smacking his hands as if he's saying, I'm 18 floors up. And I mean, does he actually think he's scaled that and then he's hanging off and he's just going to send him to his death? I think it works quite well in a Benny Hill sketch, but it's just, I'm just like, what is going on here?
What were the motives?
Yeah, yes. And then he smacks both his hands. He's like, I really need to fucking nail my granddaughter here, so just fuck off. I'm going to send this guy to his death, and then by the time the police come in to interview me, I'll have done my business. Like, and then he stands up and he's like, you know, you're the shortest, you're the tallest short guy I've ever known. It's like, what, do you think he's 18 floors tall, dear? Chris, it was just like, I understand why I loved it as a kid. I just think it's shit now.
Look, I'll be honest with you, Dave. This movie is just nonsense, and there's some truly woeful bits in it. None of the gags are funny. They aren't. I mean, this bit of trivia, this is the last movie that the Rat Pack were ever in, Dave. And the reason, and if you notice, when they go and see Frank later on, you know that they're not in the same room as him, don't you?
It's a proper samurai cop job, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not quite as obvious as samurai cop, but it is pretty obvious that Frank is not in the room with everyone else.
Yeah, and even though Dean and Sammy Davis convinced him to come on it, the only bit where he is on set with everyone is the bit in the car after the fight where he says to him, like, oh, Fenderbaum, Blake, and then he says, I'm going. Now, in context of the movie, he won't be able to just join the Cannonball Run because you've got to clock in. But it's Frank Sinatra, Dave, you know what I mean? So let's do walk it step by step, because you're right. So we meet this Dom, who's a fucking bellend. He's the Cannelloni's fucking son, and he's an idiot. an absolute idiot. And you've got Jaime, who is played by Telly Savalas, with his guys, goons. He owes them money, doesn't he? And then it's like they throw him through a wall. And he's like, it's just nonsense. But then you've got the three mafia guys trying to rip off the sheik because he's given them money. And you've got that whole cat and mouse thing, Dave, which is like a ridiculous slapstick fucking James Bond stuff in it. Even the nod, that's from James Bond with the helicopter when it gets on a car and lifts him up. No way a car would be able to be lifted up by a helicopter. Not that size anyway. But none of it's funny, is it?
No.
And the only way they can get the sheik is to have a girl who is, let's be honest, Dave, stunning. Basically pull a top open and just shows her friendly bits to him fucking pretty much. And the sheik just fucking stops at 100 miles an hour and then gets caught out. But that whole dialogue, like you say, you've got the two Lamborghini girls who any man with any fucking sense, I would not give up my fucking, if I had a Trans Am, Dave, some girl wants to flash her fucking breasts at me. Would I give you my car? Would I fuck? But these lads, fucking blokes, just do it anyway, don't they? They just fucking hand over the keys and they're going to get a weekend they'll never forget. And it's just... And these two girls, Dave, are the same characters from the first one. Even the completely different actors. It's Jill and Marcy. It's exactly the same. So why the original ones? They must have turned the roles down or something. I don't know, but yeah.
Can't imagine why.
Well, yeah. It just... the film is not a patch on the first one. I'm happy to admit that. It is not... a patch on it. And you're right, there's no fucking racing. There's no racing. At least in the first one, it was all start the race effort. It's just one scene after another and you've got this stupid dialogue. And I tell you, I always cringe at, Dave, when Burt Reynolds, they get that private pile, that guy comes and they fucking, and he's got the worst dyed hair ever. He's a good friend of Burt Reynolds. It was his last film, actually. But that whole thing, to believe Jim Nabbers, he's called, that he was actually in the army as a private, Dave. He's about fucking 50.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I say, you've got Kojak there, haven't you? Don. I think I kind of liked his character as a kid. Thought he was a bit funny. Didn't like Kojak very much. You know, he seemed a bit of an arsehole. But the levels of this film, the fact that he's called Don, it's like fucking hilarious. And is the Pinto Ranch a bit of a knocking shop or what?
I think so, Dave, because them girls, I think so.
When you get the shake, and of course we missed Dr. Van Helsing, didn't we? Yeah. He was from the first one. He's got an unbelievable like middle finger, hasn't he? When he sort of holds it out there, and he's like, "Yeah, I sterilized it." So he's just picking up his kind of role from the first one, really, isn't he? But you know, they get the sheik, and then this is a race across America, Chris. So I don't understand when he gets kidnapped, how everyone sort of converges and they're all right there and like, at the same time. You know, when like Burt Reynolds catches up with everyone else, so it's like Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. and what have you, and then they're like, "Oh, the Sheik's been kidnapped and stuff." It's like, this is a fucking coincidence, isn't it? But then, you know, they go on this ridiculous plan. Chris, when they get Burt Reynolds, Dom DeLuise and Sammy Davis Jr. to dress up as women to do the old Stop in the Name of Love by the Supremes, isn't it? And then Don is watching. Dean Martin, I kind of like yourself, I've got a warmness. You know, he's so nervous, isn't he? Because he's like, what the fuck are we doing here? But I don't genuinely understand the plan. I guess it's to infiltrate, you know, the Pinto Ranch, because they're not going to get in there by force. So it's to pretend they're girls and they're auditioning. But why is Don like, lifetime contracts? I don't get it, because everyone can see they're blokes dressed as women or fucking ugly. I just don't get it. Don's reaction there.
No, it doesn't, because I do like when Dean Martin's cigarette falls in his fucking Jack Daniels. It's just like, what the fuck? But even when after that bit, and it don't make any sense, you're right, you've got life, and because he says you've got lifetime contracts, but hopefully I won't be here. And I'm like, yeah. But I don't know what, even now watching, I've always been puzzled by that line, and Dom Dom's just a fucking bell end anyway. But then when they meet Telly Savalas and he's talking to him and he turns around, I want the hormones they're on and all this, but it's just weird, isn't it? The whole pretense of the idea of these three, I know it's just like a parody, a piss take, but it just doesn't work. It just, yeah, it's always puzzled me that. And then we get the whole Russian standoff then, don't we? Because it's where they're all there and you've got Kojak and everyone's in, you know, thing is like, you've got any last requests? And, you know, Burt Reynolds, JJ's like, yeah, I'll have a bit of quiche and chicken fricassee and all some of the guys are saying. Freaking chicassee, yeah, and all that. And they're all saying all that. And then the next minute, you've got the whole, everyone turns up. Now, obviously, Dave, you know, we all think in a situation, we can all do a bit, don't we? We all think that if you're in that situation, watching a film, no matter who they are, gangster or not, you're going to step up. But these levels to this game, Dave, and these fucking car racers take out a full mafia fucking squad, Dave. That is not fucking believable at all. Richard Keel's throwing people around like he's B.A. Baracus, isn't he? In Telly Savalas goes, fucking, I mean, when I was a kid, I always believed that Mr. T could pick people up and physically throw them over his shoulder. You know what I mean? Like you watch it, but it's not physically possible, Dave. Unless, like, he was 7 foot, like a wrestler. Like, say, you know, I mean, even Shaquille O'Neal is huge, 7 foot. He could ragdoll people. And he probably could be a Baracuson, but Mr. T is 6 foot. I mean, Richard Keel is 7 foot ish. And he's throwing people around, Dave. It's so fucking believable.
He throws old fucking Kojak off there like he's Superman or something. And you can see the wires even now. They've not digitally removed them or anything. Yeah, it's not good. And fucking the nuns, they turn into fucking Cynthia Rothrock, don't they? They're kicking the mob's ass. Yeah. And meanwhile, you've got Don Don just checking out the jewellery of Fender Bomb. And it's like, and then he hands his gun over. Oh, fuck me.
but this all plays into what you said about the lack of racing. So, look, the first one, the fight in the first one's brilliant with the Hells Angels. It's all ad hoc. They turn up. They get that guy who's pretending to be the cyclist and his bride. I never understood the concept of why that guy wore a wig. Like they seemed to think that it evaded the police that they were driving on one wheel for fucking 1,500 miles, but nobody had caught on that it's a bloke in a wig. But that was the first one. The pretense of that fight, you can understand. And I love that fight. But the second one, even though as a kid, I used to think, oh, I love the second fight and that. Mm. It's pretty shit. I mean, Burt Reynolds, you know, he was a stuntman, Dave. That is him jumping. He jumps off the top of that building onto, obviously, crash mats. He was a stuntman. I love when Burt Reynolds, that's why I always have admiration for him, because he pretty much did most of his stunts. It's very rare that he didn't. Even when he had serious accidents with his back and that, he still carried on. Unfortunately, that's how he ended up with a painkilling addiction, because of, he was trying to be, he always felt inferior to the stuntmen. Instead of him just doing his craft, he always wanted to get involved. So stuff like that's brilliant. And I mean, the stuff with Jackie Chan when he does a kick in that, Dave, you know, and he's like there with Jackie and stuff, he's just fucking stupid. And Jackie Chan didn't want to do this. He had an obligation with Warner Brothers to turn up on set. So look, it's nonsense. I mean, Richard Keel does like he's playing bowling, doesn't he, at one point? He fucking jaws. That's called Arnold in this. And he does the skittle thing and you hear the skittle noise, don't you? Like he's attempting bowling. But yeah, the whole thing is just a farce. And the last thing I'm going to say is, when they go back to racing and we see Frank, which I mentioned before, and he says, so I'm going to do it. And you see Frank Sinatra go past him in his car and stuff. There's literally 30 seconds of it. And then we get this little cartoon dialogue, don't we, with an arrow going across the... They've not got far in that race, you know, because they're at the Pinto Ranch, which is in Vegas. They've got to get to Connecticut, which is on the east side. So the whole racing across the country...
I thought Connecticut was more kind of middle.
Oh, is it? I thought Connecticut was east. You could be right. But either way, the majority of the racing is done at the end for about fucking 5 minutes in this little cartoon thing. So yeah, it never works for me, Dave, I must admit. And yeah.
So I'm looking, you're right. It's sort of north of New York. Where am I thinking of? You know what? I think I'm thinking of Cincinnati, Connecticut, right?
So
that's right over. So it is like the whole country. Fuck me, that's a race.
That's what I mean. So it's the whole of America. But they show it for like, the reason I know that, by the way, Connecticut, Dave, is because of the wrestling, because the WWE or WWF headquarters is in Connecticut. So there was used to a lot of their events in New York. It's the only reason I know, not for some fucking geography specialist. There's got to be a link for me somewhere. But it does the whole thing, and it always pissed me off. I'm thinking, well, we should be half an hour worth of racing and we've got nothing. You know, we've got nothing as a fan. So yeah, it doesn't hold up. And the fact that the Sheik fucking employees the orangutan. That's the point, Dave, where I imagine you sat there and went, I'm out, and walked out the room.
I was already out, but it was just another nail in the coffin, to be honest. And I was like, Chris, I had two goes at watching this because I fell asleep the first time. I watched the rest of it again last night, and I'm like, scratching my head now, and I'm thinking, who won? And I know the Sheikh didn't win because old Khan, his dad, he didn't appreciate that he'd lost, and, you know, he hires the orangutan and whatever. Who won the race, Chris?
The two guys, the ones who had the orangutan.
Right,
that's what it says.
Right.
I've employed the driver of the winning car.
We didn't see it, though, did we?
No. No, and what's weird is when them two guys turn up at the end, it feels it's like they've got the two guys just before we know who wins, and that guy and goes, yeah, guys, you're 4 hours and 17 martinis too late. You're racing back tomorrow. But it's like, well, why? What have they done wrong to say you've got to race back?
Didn't get that. Yeah, that made no sense to me. You're racing back tomorrow. What?
Why?
Is there another one?
Yeah.
And the thing is, the prize money, you know, the thing that's got everyone like with a massive fucking hard on is $1 million. And the Sheikh is throwing around like money like confetti. And when Don Don asks him for some money, you know, and he said he apparently owes old Kojak there, he owes him $9 million. But then he says, I'll give you 18. But then he's saying about the race, he said before the prize money was 1 million and now it's 2 million. Well, if you don't give a fuck about throwing away another 9 million, it just doesn't make sense to me how what he actually values money as.
Yeah.
Another bit of nonsense, isn't it?
It is, right. Go on, Dave. Shall we get into our review?
Let's go.
Dave, you've got to go first on this because I've been fucking chomping at the bit for your fucking review wrap up on this one.
Well, Chris, you might be surprised that I didn't think this one held up very well. One of the things that I didn't call out there, you mentioned about Tony Danza. It sounds bizarre. I just thought, fuck me, what a specimen he was back then. You know, they didn't particularly show him without his shirt off or anything, but you could see he looked ripped in his in his red top there. Bizarre little thing to pick up on there. Chris, I had a look because I watched it and I'm thinking, crap, is it just me who just thinks this is woefully terrible? And no, I think you'd called it out before that it's 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. The legendary Roger Ebert says, Cannonball Run 2 is one of the laziest insults to the intelligence of moviegoers that I can remember. Sheer arrogance made this picture. Now, to throw in some balance, Chris, I thought I'd pick out one of the very rare, one of the 13%, a guy called Bill Mowbray from Film 4. And it says, this is an easy, madcap, guilty pleasure that plays like a hyperactive cross between wacky races and the Dukes of Hazzard. So I can kind of get why it's a guilty pleasure. And essentially, if you've watched it over and over, the years, you don't notice it aging so badly. But for me, I haven't. And I do think this one has aged terribly badly. I didn't think the first one aged brilliantly, but definitely it was better than this. And it had that charm, that magic about it. It didn't pretend to be anything more. Whereas here, I think they've tried to crowbar a plot, this whole kidnap plot and you know, owing money to the mob, into a racing movie. And they forgot about all the racing bits. You've got some great, charming actors in here. You know, I do think Dean Martin, the likes of Burt Reynolds, Dom DeLuise, you know, these are kind of Hollywood royalty, if you like. But And I always liked Fenderbaum, to be honest, Sammy Davis Jr. I thought he was great. But this film is a mess. I genuinely don't know if they had a script or if they just kind of had a high-level plot, you know, and they had these different scenes and then they just let the actors kind of ad-lib. Because some of it just feels ad-libbed. And yeah, Chris, this is terrible. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but this is going to Alderaan for me. I never need to see this again. And it is such a disappointment because I loved it so much as a kid. But as an adult, it's woeful.
So,
I can see the bottom lip going.
The whole podcast depends on this, Dave. Right? So, no, honestly, for me, it is a bad movie. And I think this time watching it, and it obviously, you know, completely blindsided, but the actual editing is terrible. It's verging on a TV movie. It really is. That even though it's got this star-studded cast, it is fucking woeful. But, and there's a big but, Dave, I love these movies. I love both of them so, so much. They're just part of our family's DNA. Burt Reynolds, you know, other members of my family, I've heard it at do's going, what the fuck is your fascination with Burt Reynolds films? You fucking love him, you lot. And I've said that line before on the show, but we just absolutely love them. And I can sit there and watch them. I've got an hour and a half to myself. I think, you know what? I'll put the Cannonball Run on. And the first thing I do, Dave, and I did it the other day, as soon as a Lamborghini comes on, whichever movie it is, it goes in my family's WhatsApp group, Dave, and every one of them's going, fucking class, I'm going to have to watch it. My sisters, my brothers, if I sent it to my dad, he'd end up watching it. My mum's had to watch him over and over again, Dave. I don't know if she's a fan or not, but she's had to sit there and watch him. We have just that, we had the Matchbox cars, you know, obviously like the Ferraris, the Transams, the Lamborghinis, everything. We had all of them and we absolutely adore these movies. So Dave, it's a terrible movie, but it's got Burt Reynolds, one of my all-time movie heroes. It's going right to the top, my friend. This one is going to Cloud City. Cloud City all day long. I don't care how fucking wrong my scoring ethics are and they don't make any sense. I cannot score this movie down. It's one of my all-time favourites. So it is terrible. If you watch it, it's your own fault, but you cannot diss it to me, Dave. And I've loved this today because I just knew you'd come in on fire. When I was watching it, I'm going, oh, Dave's going to fucking hate that bit. But that makes it even better.
I think the only other one we've scored, well, actually there's two, isn't there? I think we sent Samurai Cop to the top because it was so bad. And then Miami Connection, I think we sent to Pleasantville. But I don't think we've ever been quite opposite ends of the scale before, have we?
No,
I don't think so. We're, and especially, like, I'm the heel. I've got nothing good to say about it really at all.
You're
defending it. And it's like, oh, this is great. And I can get, you know, if you're a bit of a petrol head and obviously love Burt Reynolds, it's the Hasselhoff with me, isn't it? I love the Hoff. Ironically, but I get the feeling you genuinely love Burt Reynolds. We've made this analogy before, but it's kind of like if you're watching a porn movie, you know, you're watching it for a certain thing, aren't you? And so if the jokes fall a bit flat or if the plot is a bit thin, you're not really interested, are you? So I can get that. If you're watching it for the cars and for the characters, everything else doesn't matter. But I was shocked by how all the jokes fell flat for me. I just didn't think anything was particularly funny. And yeah, it just lost the whole magic of an actual race. And the fact that, you know, the win happens off camera. It's just utterly bizarre to me. So, yeah, I am glad we've done this one. I did feel like I dodged a bullet with another Lauren Avedon, Cynthia Rothrock combo. But after I'd watched it, I was like, nope, I think I might have sooner watched that.
I've sent that movie to Max as well. Me and Max did, obviously. We did the review, didn't we, on Comics in Motion? So I sent Max that one, whatever it is, that New York fucking takedown.
Oh, Max will watch that. That is right up Max's street.
Yeah, I sent it to him. And it's the full film's on YouTube, which says it all. It's not called New York Takedown, but whatever it is, it's fucking terrible. From 2000, Avedon and Cynthia Rothrock. So at some point, Dave, that is coming into the fucking fray, my friend. But anyway, Dave, what have we got for next week?
Well, Chris, I thought we would cover a James Bond parody that's actually done well this time. This is going to be the Mike Myers classic Austin Powers. Now, Chris, let's get into the trailer.
In 1967, an international secret agent was cryogenically frozen in case the world ever required his services again. Now, evil is threatening the Earth. And the time has come to bring him back into the 90s.
It's not unusual.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Danger Powers Personal Effects.
Actually, my name is Austin Powers. Danger's my middle name.
I'm going to need you to sign these release forms.
Okay, name. Sex? Yes, please.
In his time, he was the coolest secret agent alive. Unfortunately,
it's freedom, baby. Yeah.
This is not his time. He's a swinger in a square world.
A lot's changed since 1967.
Bring on the sexy snooze, man. Yeah.
We're called flight attendants now.
And he's a stranger in a strange land.
My mother, Mrs. Exposition.
Lovely.
Austin!
What have you done?
That's not your mother, it's a man, baby!
No. Why won't this wig come off? Well, now you shake it to the left, you shake it to the right, you're doing a hippie shake. Jiggle, jiggle.
Ow! That really hurt. Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
Mike Myers.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Elizabeth Hurley.
Don't forget these.
Oh, thanks.
Austin Powers. International man of mystery.
Always wanting to have fun, Austin. That's you in a nutshell.
No, this is me in a nutshell. Help, I'm in a nutshell.
So Dave, great trailer. I actually went to the cinema to watch this. However, you may be surprised when we watch this because that's what I'm going to say. No more than that. I need to watch it before I thingy. But all I'll say is I've never been a massive fan of Austin Powers, Dave.
I do feel like this is Marmite and karma might be coming back to hit me. Because I can't, the kind of comedy that's in this one, I'm not sure if it's exactly in your sweet spot. So I have no idea how, you're going to review this one. But if I was a betting man, I'd say not well.
Oh,
it does have Pete Liz Hurley in it, Chris.
Well, yeah, obviously, ding dong, Dave, ding dong, as they say. But no, definitely. So just before we go, Dave, big thank you to our patrons, patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback if you want to support us. And the roll call of honour for today, and we really appreciate all your support, guys, is we've got Matt, Heath, Haley, Dylan, Kent, Lucky Lulu Green. We've got Herb, Jax, Maff, Blake, John Hammond, Brent from the Cinema Chat Podcast, and Mr. Tony Farina. So thank you all you guys for supporting us. And we will be doing another late fees really soon for you guys. So thank you so much for all that. And if you want to follow us on social media, at VHS Strikes Back. If you want to email us, the vhsstrikesback@gmail.com. So thank you, everyone, for your support. We really, really appreciate it. And it's just good fun when me and Dave disagree and everything, because I love listening back to it. Not being a narcissist, I just love it because it's just so funny when we completely disagree. So brilliant. And with that bombshell, Dave, what are you going to take us out with today, my friend?
Well, I knew that was coming, but I, you know, for so many classic lines in this, Chris, that I couldn't find, I thought I'd have to double it back and throw it back at you. So what classic line out of this Cloud City based movie that you worship would you like to finish us off with?
I don't know how that ended up doubling.
Well, how did that happen? The top rated quote in this one, Chris, is, "Here is to good luck," and this is by the Sheikh. "May it all be mine." Fucking hilarious, Chris. So I thought, seeing as you love it, I thought you've got to finish it off with a great quote.
Well, Dave,
that I can't find.
Here we go. I've got two, right? So. Captain Chaos's line to Frank Sinatra, Dave, and this sums up the whole movie, and this is in the blooper reel, it's not actually in the movie, and this is the calling Frank the King, and he says, "Your Majesty, the Cannonball Run is a race from Connecticut to your ass." And that's all I'm going to say, Dave, because it is fucking woeful, and I'm so sorry I've put you through it, my friend. I will see you next time.
No, you're not. I know.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
You are.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid fool.
Yeah, maybe you can fight something.
I ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months. Come on.
I must break you.